Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. And the streak of sadness continues. We don't have everyone here tonight. Our man JR is getting himself ready to actually go watch our Vikings play in person. So he's getting things packed up and ready to go for that trip. But I am still joined by the other two members of the Climbing the Pocket crew. Wide receiver one, Miles Gorham. What's going on, my man?
Ready to kill Yinka with some of these takes and
make sure he
knows what's up.
Okay, Miles is fired up tonight. I like it. Saxy Prince, answer back, man. Miles came right at you out the gate.
Yeah, it's fine that he loves to defend a guy who's going to find his way on the bench so pretty soon. But, you know, it's cool. You know, I still have love for Miles. Miles is one of my boys. You know, we play football together. He's my wide receiver one, so, you know, it's cool.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, shots are already being thrown around here, so let's just jump right to it. Case Keenum, I think it's obvious. I feel like, you know, everyone on the podcast said this the last time we were recording, but, you know, Case Keenum was named the starter again for the game this Thursday, Thanksgiving, Detroit, and not a surprise to anyone. But as we're starting to look at Case, you know, we have about half a season, a little bit more than half a season of tape on him now. And so we're looking at Case's his performance. You know, right now he's ranked 18th by Pro Football Focus. He's second in QBR, second in DVOA, second in DYAR, 12th in traditional passer rating, 21st in PFF passer rating, 14th in accuracy percentage. And so one of the things that I want, this is the reason I went and found this one. So I know that one of the things that Prince, you've kind of been worried about Case a little bit, YOLO Case, putting the ball in harm's way and things like that. But he's sixth best in the league right now in terms of turnover-worthy throws. Like, he's protecting the football. But I guess the other places where if you were going to look and try to find a place to maybe detract from what Case is doing or say that it is something about the system is that he ranks 21st in the percentage of his yards that actually come in the air, and he ranks 20th in big-time throws from Pro Football Focus. So, you know, with that overall kind of view of what Case Keenum is and how he's performed season to date, I don't think there's any way that you really can make an argument that he is playing anything but good football, above average football for the Minnesota Vikings. And so, Saxy Prince, I'm going to flip it to you first and give you the first crack at this one here. But are you finally ready to embrace Case Keenum as your quarterback?
You know the answer to this.
Yeah, but I'm going to give him a chance. So based on all of that great, efficient production that you're seeing right there, that, if we're being honest, is better than anything you've ever seen from Teddy at any point in the NFL. Are you ready at this point to say, hey, maybe we got something special going here with Case Keenum and embrace him as your quarterback?
Yeah, I am ready to embrace him as the starter for eventually another team when he leaves the Vikings after this offseason. Case is, he's playing fine or whatever. You know, he's cool. I mean, he's doing his thing. He's throwing some of the nice balls and all other stuff. And, you know, Zim had some compliments for him and whatever. And I guess he's been playing all right. You know, he's cool, whatever, you know. But in all seriousness, I think I'm not going to trash Case because, you know, I was impressed. Like, something that has impressed me with Case is his pocket movement. He has actually done very, very well in the pocket. I think, you know, obviously that magician throw that he, you know, kind of channeled his inner Barry Sanders and was able to escape and find Thielen down the field and whatnot. So, I think that's, you know, some things that you see in Case that, it kind of improves this point that I think Miles was the one that brought it up in our group chat and stuff. And it shows the importance of teams not just settling when it comes to the backup quarterback position. Vikings did a really good job in getting a guy who not only is he's like, yeah, he's a journeyman, he's a guy who can operate and whatnot in the system, but, you know, a guy who could potentially start for your franchise, even if it's for an extended period of time. I will defend him again with one of the stats that you threw out as far as, you know, yards through the air. I do think there might be like a slight correlation between, you know, some of the YOLO balls that we've seen. He's not throwing them as much. So obviously that's reducing his, you know, average yards, you know, through the air, which I think is also helping out that percentage as far as his, you know, his turnover ratio, because I think that probably would have been a little bit higher had he continued to be YOLO case. But, you know, again, he's fine, fine, or whatever, you know, he's cool.
So, like, I feel like, and you know, Miles kind of alluded to a little bit of this, I think, before we were recording here, but there's, like, an undercurrent of disrespect for a guy who's playing really, really, really well. Like, really, really well. Don't seem to want to acknowledge the fact that he is playing at a lights-out level right now.
He's playing fine. And again, you I think Matthew word, Collar like... was the one. He's fine. It's fine. Bro. It's fine. He's playing at his whatever. Here's what I'm gonna say.
Teddy,
I think
if Matthew this was Teddy Bridgewater playing like this right now, you would be calling for
that. This was Teddy Bridgewater.
You would be calling for that man to be a Pro Bowl quarterback.
Well, he's already a Pro Bowl quarterback, so I don't need I don't need to do that. And he's already a
future franchise. Stop. Stop.
But okay, Matthew Collar,
you've had your let Miles come in, and then you can come back in.
All I have to say is Matthew Collar wrote a wonderful article. He talked about Case. He has done this before, right? He has done it where he gets really, really hot. He looks like a really great starting quarterback, and then he doesn't. Anyways, go ahead, Miles. Go ahead.
So I think the biggest issue, and what I hate the most is that I'm like sitting here caping for a guy like Case Keenum when I am a Teddy Bridgewater stan. Like, That's my guy. That's my quarterback. That's probably, you know, one of my favorite players. But I think the problem is right now is we see that Teddy's healthy and we know that Teddy's ready to go. So we're just like, let's get Teddy in the game. And I'm all for it if the team decides to make that decision. But I think to like basically tell Case he hasn't played like a top 10-ish quarterback right now is crazy, because that's what he's doing. And I know the offense and the scheme has definitely helped him a lot. And we've seen some of the peaks and valleys and kind of, you know, where he is in terms of what kind of quarterback he is. And we've kind of seen Case at a peak, and I don't know if he, you know, if there's that much, if the ceiling goes that much higher. We've kind of seen a little bit of what that floor is too. The floor is definitely risen for him. It's not, you know, and I'm not saying he can't have a bad game. He can't have one of those like, oh wow, you know, like this is why he's, you know, our backup quarterback type
but
games where he,
but that
you know,
was one of the points that I definitely want to make sure that you make, because one of the first things you said coming kind of out of this last game is that, you know, even though the numbers were bigger in the Washington game and more impressive, and he was the FedEx Player of the Week and all that, one of the things that you took away is that you were actually more encouraged by the way Case played against the Rams. I guess, can you explain a little bit about why you felt that way coming out of this game?
Yeah. I mean, again, I think, you know, box score stats are always fun. They're always great to see. You know, you love to see your players and teams put up big points. You know, we had 38 points a couple weeks ago against Washington and in Washington, so – that's always great to see. But I mean, you know, Case did have those two really bad interceptions, and you know, we almost kind of gave that game away when we had that game well in hand into the third quarter, and we had an opportunity to kind of put it away, you know, late in the third quarter, early in the fourth, and kind of threw that away a little bit, and you know, things could have changed. This last week, I think from start to finish, Case was this is one of the better games he played. I know there was obviously some missed throws and some missed, you know, opportunities that always happens, but you know, from start to finish, I think what Case did was able to do, you know, after the first couple drives, you know, what was it, 7-7? I wasn't really worried, because there were drives that we had that we didn't even score, and I was feeling confident because we were getting down the field. Case was getting us down the field. Yeah, there was a couple penalties that kind of pushed us back out of field goal range and such, and obviously missed the two field goals. But overall, we were sustaining drives, converting on third down, and making sure and giving our defense the opportunity to rest enough to where that they could come back on the field and make sure that, you know, Jared Goff and the number one rated offense in Todd Gurley and Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, all those guys couldn't really do much. And that's exactly what happened. So I think he's not getting enough credit for that. I know the accolades like the FedEx player of the week and all that's great. But I think this last game was probably one of Case's better games in terms of start to finish, everything he was able to do and accomplish, and in terms of what the offense was being asked to do to win this game this last week. I think Case performed really well.
Yeah, and so really with all of that, and you know, I'm gonna flip it back to Yinka here, because I mean, as we talked about last week, you know, last pod you weren't here, Miles, but we did call him out for being a bit of a hater, and so I'm gonna flip it back to him here and try to give him an opportunity, you know, because it does sound like a lot of what he's doing there is hating, and I get it. And our friend, you know, Luke Brown, we interact with him a lot on Twitter. He summed it up pretty well, I think, and he said, you know, Case and Teddy win in a lot of the same ways. The difference between Case and Teddy boils down to accuracy. And so when you start looking at accuracy as being that thing, it can feel a bit nitpicky, especially yes. when the performance looks as good as it did. So yeah, there were definitely some plays here and there where we left yards, maybe touchdowns on the field because Case's throw wasn't as accurate as it needed to be. But based on how the overall result came out, it does feel a bit nitpicky when you start to get into that stuff. But what I want to say to you, Sexy Prince, or I want to ask you is, given where we are at this point in the season, how things are going, how the team is playing, how Case is doing, what will it actually take from Case Keenum to get you 100% on board, riding with Case Keenum as your 2017 Vikings ride or die quarterback?
You mean besides him wearing number 5 and being Teddy Bridgewater?
Well, yeah, besides that.
Yeah, and putting on 2 gloves. Here's what I will say. Miles said something that I think that was interesting. I think he said something along the lines of he's raised his floor, but maybe not his ceiling. I almost would kind of disagree. I don't think his floor has risen at all. But I will concede that I do think that his ceiling has gone up more than I expected it to, and something that I'm a lot more comfortable with. If Case Keenum can play at his ceiling for the rest of the season, or even for the next 2 or 3 games, if that is what he ends up doing, I will concede Case Keenum can be the quarterback not only just for the rest of the season, but also throughout the playoffs.
So you're saying if we get to 11-2, you know, through this 3-game stretch, and we're 11-2,
if we get to 11, well, no, we don't even get to need to get to 11-2. I just want to see if he can play at that ceiling for the next 2 or 3 games. I would concede let him play for the rest of the season and even in the playoffs. I would concede that. Because that ceiling that he is playing at, it looks very, very good. He's making decisive decisions. His passes are still a little bit iffy for me. But I do think some of the throws that he's able to make, and something that's even impressed me a little bit more is his ability to improvise. Those kinds of intangibles, how he's working in the pocket, his improvisation skills, his ability to find, get Kyle Rudolph more involved into the game, as well as you've seen kind of the emergence of top 5 Adam Thielen. I would like to see Diggs get into that mix just a little bit more. But, yeah, if he can do that, then, yeah, rest of the season and also the playoffs.
I think that's kind of where I'm saying, I think what we've seen and when we've seen Case at his highest so far this season, I really think that's like his ceiling. Case's ceiling. What I'm saying is, and I have a hard time envisioning him going higher than that because there's only so much more he could really do to beat that ceiling at this point. I think what I'm saying though is like in this offense with the weapons that he has and the offensive line that he has, Case's floor has definitely gotten higher because I don't expect him to. I'm not going to say giveaway games because that could definitely happen. But I think there's more of a level of expectation. The way you kind of mentioned it, Prince, was like his movement in the pocket, his ability to get guys like Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph, and those guys involved. he has that consistency. That consistency is there now of the weapons and like what he wants to do successfully on this team and in this offense. We're seeing that week in and week out now. So what I'm saying is, like, I think that floor has definitely gone up to where, like, you're going to see a little bit more of a consistent level of play from him, whether he plays rest of season or not. I just think, like, we've kind of seen the bad, but I think, I don't know, I just think, like, there's, like, I don't think he can go below, like, what that floor is at this point anymore right now. I mean, obviously things could change, but from what we've seen, I just think that floor has definitely risen for him. And again,
the numbers actually bear out a bit of what Miles was talking about. So Casey came in, he had the game against Tampa Bay, which up until this last game, per PFF, was his best game of the season. So we had a 77.1 grade against Tampa, which is slightly above average on their scale, right? But then the next three games, which were really the games that gave, you know, I guess the hardcore Teddy supporters, the Teddy files, as some might call them, all their ammo, in that he was really uneven in the next couple of games. Like, he had a game in there. The next game he came in and played, he had a 65, a 47, and a 54 in terms of his game grades, which were really the things he was having a lot of that inconsistency, putting the ball in harm's way, actually creating turnovers with interceptions. But then in the last three games, he's been, you know, at 79, 71, and 78. And so as kind of to the point that Miles is making there, is that there is a definite change in kind of how Case Keenum is playing over these last three games. Some of that could also be the defenses we're facing, but the Rams were legit. I mean, at least we all thought they were legit going in, and he went and he handled them, right? He handled his business against that team that was one of the better defensive teams in all the league, right? So to the point that Miles is making there, when you look at kind of where he was in that middle part of the season where things were very inconsistent and the ball was being put in harm's way a little bit more, if you're looking, I guess, on a throw-by-throw basis as they do at PFF, I mean, it does look anyway like there has been an increase or an elevation in kind of that floor for Case Keenum, where it is just hovering in that, you know, right at slightly above average or slightly below average versus, you know, really bad that we saw for three straight games before that. So I know Prince, you had a point that you wanted to hop in on, but I just wanted to point out that, you know, as per usual, it looks like Miles is right here.
But no, there is something that I did want to comment on. It jogged my memory because, you know, I was at the game and I got a decent view and stuff. And this has kind of happened as I've watched the tape over the last couple weeks. I think Adam Thielen emergence has definitely been a revelation for the Vikings. It's definitely been a revelation for Case Keenum. You've kind of seen a small dip in production when it comes to Stephon Diggs. But another guy that, or maybe even a trio of guys that are getting hurt by this, is Laquan Treadwell, Michael Floyd, and Jarius Wright. Now, there's a lot of people who are kind of done with Laquan Treadwell. But some things that I have seen, especially when I saw it at the game, is like, this guy is getting open. This guy is a player that, you know, he's not going to see that 65-yard catch and run that from Adam Thielen, but you know, when it comes to not having to spoon feed Thielen as much, you are seeing Laquan Treadwell be able to get open. And that's maybe not some of the things that you were seeing as much in towards the beginning of the season. So that's, for me, that's just when I talk about, you know, obviously when you think about, you know, his ceiling versus his floor and stuff, I guess my mentality is just that I do want to see Keenum spread the ball out a little bit more and why not. Yeah, if it's going to be a Thielen show, whatever the case is, yeah, that's great. But I do also want to see him have the ability to feature other wide receivers if they are the ones that are getting open.
Well, but I guess where I don't agree with this is the fact that if it's working, I mean, why does he need to change what's working for him if the defenses aren't going to account for it, if they're not going to take it away from him? Which we've played 10 games this season, and we have still have yet to really see any receiver besides Thielen, Diggs, Rudolph, and really Jerick McKinnon and a little bit of Jarius Wright really be involved. So, like, they're not – defenses aren't taking away Adam Thielen, and I still think they're kind of struggling to understand
if we double team Adam Thielen, that leaves Stephon Diggs wide open. That leaves Stephon Diggs one on one. That's a terrible matchup. You know who the what that defense is. So like, right now we have the best 1-2 punch in the league. It's really hard to kind of go away from that. And I understand, like, and you know me, I've sort of caped for kind of what Laquon Treadwell is in terms of his opportunities to be able to get himself open. But I'm not like mad at Case Keenum for not finding him, because he's finding the same opportunities with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs and Kyle Rudolph and those guys, and they're still successful with it. So it's not like it's coming at – like if this team starts like regressing and starts going down and doesn't start, you know, this consistency of scoring and converting on third downs, and he's – you know, and people are starting to double cover guys like Diggs and Thielen more often and take those guys away, and then we're not trying to, you know, take those opportunities with guys like Treadwell and Floyd and Wright, then I'll have an issue with it. But it's working, so like, I don't see an issue with it at all.
Yeah, no, it is, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. And I don't know if we're going to see another defense for the rest of the season that's really going to, you know, potentially exploit the Vikings in the way that I'm starting to see possibilities for them to exploit the Vikings. You know, if they're obviously able to get a consistent pass rush with just four guys, you know, if they're able to, you know, roll some of their safeties over to Diggs and Thielen and really blanket them the entire game. You know, is that going to prove to be a game where Case can, you know, work with Kyle Rudolph a little bit more, find Jairus Wright a little bit more, Mike Floyd? Or will it be a game where, you know, we might see him, you know, regress more towards what his mean is, or maybe closer to his floor? Again, that's just a concern that I have, not just for Keenan, but I guess the offense in and of itself. And I agree with you. It's not just on Keenum to do that. But I just it just seems like it might be a way that you know, defensive coordinators could eventually exploit us. But also could not be. I mean, we could definitely ride the wave all the way to deep into the playoffs of the Super Bowl and not ever have to worry about it. But it's just something that I've seen on tape consistently, and I'm just wondering if someone is going to eventually be able to get that figured out.
Well, all right then. I guess I can't ask the next question because it'd kind of be leading a little bit, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. So is Yinka still just being a hater, or do we feel like he made sufficient points? I think we might have to post that on Twitter afterwards after this episode drops to figure out, is Yinka really being just a hater, or did he make points that actually moved you and made you feel like, yeah, maybe Case shouldn't be the guy? But before we get to that point, there was something that our man Drew. They brought it up on their pod. I feel like we need to talk about it here because I've seen it a couple times. I've seen a couple articles posted. Haven't read them yet. At some point, I will get around to doing that. That are touting Case Keenum as a potential MVP candidate. So, Miles, I'm going to let you go first. Since you've been out here defending the man, Case Keenum, I would like your position on the MVP candidacy.
Go ahead, Miles.
Of Case Keenum.
I mean, I can sit here and defend him against guys like Yinka and the nitpicking that he does. But to sit here and call him the MVP is – that's pretty preposterous in my opinion, just for the simple fact that the way Sam Bradford was able to play week one, and like you saw what this offense could really be with, you know, I guess you'd call it – I can't say it because Jason will kill me for it, but like a higher level of a quarterback, which Sam Bradford is over Case Keenum. We know that.
Wow, why would I disagree with that take? That is a factual.
Well, because I was gonna say, because I almost said elite level, but that's. I had to reel it back in a little bit, but what it really does look like though is we could call Pat Shurmur MVP over Case Keenum, in my opinion. Because
he said that as a question.
What he's been able to do with a backup quarterback and everything like that is fantastic. Because I do not think Case Keenum should be in the conversation for MVP. There's like, I hate that, you know, a team does well, so that means their quarterback has to be an MVP candidate. Like, that's not what this is, in my opinion. So no, I should be in the conversation for MVP. Like, if you start talking like other accolades, like Pro Bowls and stuff. Sure, that's fine, but like MVP, no way.
Yes, keep hating on the quarterbacks.
I'm scared to throw it to Saxy Prince after what we've already just had to experience here. But, you know, Yanka, MVP candidacy, Case Keenum. I'm not going to ask if you think he should be the MVP, because I feel like I know the answer to that already. I'm going to ask you a more precise question so that you can't hate as much. If you were constructing MVP rankings right now, would Case Keenum be 1 through 5, 6 through 10, 11 through 15, or just not on that list anywhere?
Oh, that's an easy one for me. He would easily be a 1 through 5 guy. And the only player right now, that probably maybe 2 or 3 that I'd put him above. I think I'd put Adam Thielen probably as number 1. I'd probably put Riley Reiff as number 2. And then I would pick Case Keenum
probably not number 3. Not of the Vikings, of the league, Yinka.
Oh, of the league.
Of the league, Yinka.
Of the league.
I was like, wait, he just decided he didn't want Case Keenum, but he's going to put him in the top 5 conversation for MVP. But.
So, yeah, so 1 through 5, 6 through 10, and then 11 through 15?
Then the rest. You just basically say the rest.
Oh, then the rest. Okay.
I'd put him in that 6 or 10 range, by the way, if we're getting there. Right now, I would.
I think I would put him. Oof. I would not put him 6 to 10. I think I would put him right at 11.
Like what?
Oh, you just couldn't give it to him. Hey, the man has a brand. You got to stay firm to who you are.
I mean, look at his sweatshirt.
And I respect him for that. Out here hooping in the house with the hoodie on. Hey, 11, coming strong with it.
Okay. 11 in the league, that's still pretty good, y'all.
Hey, that's not bad. That player should be someone that a team committed to for the full season as their quarterback, and that all fans should get behind and cheer for and root for without caring for his backup.
Can you name 10 more valuable players this season than Case Keenum?
Tom Brady, Alex Smith, Ben Roethlisberger.
Did you say Alex Smith?
Yeah.
Have you seen that team lately?
Lately, yeah. But I mean, obviously, I'm not just coming off the last 2 or 3 games. I mean, he was
playing. They've lost 4 of the last 5. Yanko.
Yeah. But I'm saying Alex Smith was probably for like the first 6 games of the season, he was easily the number 1 as far as MVP.
So was Sam.
So was who?
Sam Bradford, the first 5 games of the season last year. So what? Tell me
all I'm saying is, I still consider Alex Smith probably in that, 6 to 10 range. He probably is right now at 9.
He has to be higher than Case Keenum because
he doesn't.
Is what you're saying.
All right. It doesn't matter. Let's not make Yinka just list a bunch of people.
But also, they've been losing. They have been losing games, but I would have to go look at Alex Smith's numbers. But I mean, it was back to what we were saying prior to the Washington and the
Cleveland,
not Cleveland,
L.A.
Yes, Rams. Holy crap, my memory's gone. There was like a 3 or 4 game stretch where Case was not playing. To the level that he has played for the last 2 games. Like, the last 2 games, in my opinion, I've said it before, like, Case deserved to start Apple's last 2 games. The Washington game, I was a little bit iffy, but L.A. Rams game, I was okay with him starting again because I was the one that said it. If he plays well for this game, I would keep him as my starter because I wanted whoever started for this game to likely to start for the Lions game, so.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you, don't go spend any time looking up stats to compare Alex Smith and Case Keenum. Case Keenum is better in all of them. So
Thank you.
I'll save you that time right now.
As of late, yes, he has.
No,
season to date, so MVP would be for the whole season. So, as of right now, Case is better, but let's move it along.
Yes,
hold on. Jason, where did you put Case?
I use 6 through 10 for me right now, I think.
Okay, cool.
I think that's fair. But, 6 through 10, you're not really legitimately an MVP candidate. I think in this season, if anyone but Tom Brady were to win it, it'd be a travesty, just based on what he's doing.
I do think Russell Wilson should be within that 2 to 3 range category, too, though, the way that guy's playing. with that terrible offensive line, all the injuries to the defense, I think if they can find a way to kind of get to the playoffs still, I think he should definitely be in that conversation. But yes, keep going.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, Russell's definitely obviously in that range, I think. But Tom Brady, because of how bad the Patriots defense was early in the season, like they couldn't stop anybody. I think they put up like negative fantasy points for 6 weeks in a row or something like that. And the way that they've been able to kind of that he was able to keep them winning games when their defense was still kind of figuring it all out. I mean, Carson Wentz, he's up there, but they have a great defense. The Seahawks kind of had a good defense until everyone got hurt. But yeah, that's why I'm putting Tom Brady up there. So that's where I'm at. I guess, Yinka, who would be your number one?
Right now? Oh, like I said, I did name Tom Brady. Carson Wentz was I think, top three for me currently right now. Yeah, I'll go with one of those two. I'll go with either Brady or Wentz.
All right.
But don't send that to Reef because our friendship will be terminated
who,
after.
Who?
Oh, poor Miles. Poor Miles, poor Miles, poor Miles. All right. Well, I mean, we talked about everything but the last game or the next game. So I guess let's quickly talk about it. Vikings, Rams played a game. Game that we were all expecting to be a highly competitive, well, all of us who are on the pod, JR, you know, he's retweeted himself saying that he thought we were going to run through the Rams about 10 times already. So we know JR thought that it was going to be a blowout in our favor. But, I mean, I think most of us were expecting a far more competitive game than the one that we got. Anthony Harris stepped up. Harrison Smith played amazing. Latavius Murray had another great game. Jet had an underrated game that was really, really strong. I guess from y'all's perspective, you know, having watched the game, in Yinka's case, watched it live, salty, maybe through some tears. What were your thoughts when you watched it the first time? What were your thoughts when you watched it back? Kind of who were the guys that really stood out and impressed you in that game? And I'll start with you, Yinka.
There's a lot of guys that I guess I have to credit the entire defense. And I know there's only a few guys, but like I have to credit the entire defense. Terrence Newman, for instance, one guy I have to give credit to. I think there's just a lot of as far as Mike Zimmer's defense, I think it's more complex than we can even think about it. But with that, once you kind of get a hang of what your responsibilities are, and then obviously not just your responsibilities but others' responsibilities, I think that it really allows for players to. Not freelance, but maybe take some liberties as far as what they want to do. Some of those tackle for losses, I think Terrence Newman was able to recognize, you know, the guys that he had behind him, as well as, you know, as far as what they were doing schematically on that play to make some of those plays. You saw, I actually asked for it on the last pod, but, you know, some blitzing, some corners to blitz and whatnot. So you're starting to see a lot more exotic plays like Mackenzie Alexander's, for instance. But I'm really loving to see the way that this defense is kind of just flying around the ball and all the movement that's happening, not just pre-snap, but obviously after the snap. That's really, really – it's very clearly throwing off opposing quarterbacks, you know, their ability to, you know, make decisive reads. So the two guys I guess I would name would be Mackenzie Alexander and Terrence Newman on the defensive side. On the offensive side of the ball, I'm really loving what Pat Elflein has been able to do. He's just showing himself to be a really smart, capable, willing, you know, blocker and just a student of the game. So I had to definitely give him credit. I saw him seal some, make some really, really nice run blocks, as well as, you know, he had to at times handle Aaron Donald as well. So I have to credit to him. As a guy, just got to give it to Adam Thielen. I was behind where my seats were, where he had that, you know, kind of pitch and catch and just ran it down. And it was just, it was amazing. It was a just a simple move, but it's just the subtle little things. I was able to get him a 65-yard score. So, yeah, just a few guys that I noticed, but it was a great game to watch.
That is awesome. That is awesome. That is awesome. Miles, how about you, man? What were your big takeaways? Who really impressed you in this game?
Yeah, I mean, Yinka kind of stole a couple of mine. Thank you. Great minds think alike. But I was going to make the
point welcome.
That I do think this was probably Terrence Newman's best game of the season, in my opinion, at least from what I was able to see. I'd, you know, obviously go back and rewatch some of the other games, but, you know, just from, like, off the cuff, just, you're rewatching the game and kind of watching back and watching it live, too. Like, I just thought he was so dialed in. He knew exactly what a lot of the screens and a lot of the quick strike plays that the Rams were looking to run. He diagnosed them so quick and was able to you know, make plays in the backfield, you know, be able to, you know, reroute receivers, do all that. I thought he was phenomenal this game. And to piggyback off that with what Yinka said, too, about Mackenzie Alexander, I thought he played really well, too. I thought this could have been one of his better games of his career, so his young career so far, too. I know he didn't have an interception like he did last week, but I thought this was kind of in that Case Keenum way. I thought this was an overall better game for Mackenzie Alexander than the Washington game was. I thought he was able to do a lot of different things and shut down receivers in the slot. So I thought he looked really good. And then, you know, guys that kind of go unnoticed a little bit in the stat sheet sometimes, like Anthony Barr. I do think this was a lot last year too, where he's not showing up in the stat sheet, but he's making a lot of plays and opening things up for his teammates, like setting the edge and be able to kind of take things away and kind of take on a double team, take on, you know, a lineman here or two to open things up for, you know, his teammates. And I think he plays football, and I think that's what I'm a really big fan of Anthony Barr, because he's so talented. Like, he's probably one of the more talented players on this overall on this team. And to be able to do kind of some of the things he does that people don't really seem to notice, I think is great. And I think he played really well yesterday. So those would be kind of like my three key defensive players. And then I think who didn't get enough credit too is like Steven Weatherly. I know he played pretty well. I had like
pressures, hurries,
pressures, tackle for loss. Yes.
There we go.
three pressures on the quarterback in like 17 snaps, 17 passing opportunities or something like that. So that's really good. That's a really good percentage for him to be able to come in and make a little bit of an impact as a rotational player, a guy who doesn't really play all that often, you know, because you have Everson Griffin, Brian Robinson. So really happy for him. You know, hopefully he can continue to develop in that way. And then offensively, Rashad Hill, I mean, to go, like, we talk about all these undrafted guys and, you know, the stories like Adam Thielen, like, Rashad Hill's come out of nowhere. I mean, he was on the practice squad for the Jacksonville Jaguars last year. I'm sure they're kicking themselves right now that they don't have him on their team, because he's playing really well for, you know, being able to step in for Mike, for Remmers the last couple of weeks. And I thought this last game was a really good game for him. I don't think we really saw many mistakes. He's able to engage and, you know, kind of put his defenders where he wanted to in the run game, and didn't really seem to give up any pressure. So I thought he played really well. I thought he played an underrated game. Obviously the whole offensive line is, you know, has been phenomenal this season, but I like that it doesn't seem to skip a beat. When we lose players right now, like when Nick Eason went out and you had like Danny Isadora or Jeremiah Searles get in there, those guys, they're able to step in and not miss a beat. Rashad Hill comes in for Remmers and you don't miss a beat. So that's really important. All that depth, the offensive depth in general, and this team's depth is phenomenal. I think that's what's the biggest difference between this year and last year. So I'll give those guys the biggest ones. And then I think, obviously, like, you got to give 100% credit to Adam Thielen and what he's been able to do. And Latavius Murray, I think he's able to, you know, bust some big runs. Obviously, the offensive line plays a big role in that. But him being able to break some tackles, like, you know, breaking some arm tackles from guys like Aaron Donald, is not – a lot of guys don't do that. So for him to be able to do that and kind of break some tackles, which we haven't really seen a lot from him this year, I thought that was nice to see. So – Those are some of my big keys and favorite players from this last week.
What did Teddy think of
Miles? Hasn't read Luke's. Miles hasn't read Luke's article just yet.
I know. And I'm not sitting here saying that I think Latavius Murray's this all world running back or anything. But I thought, you know, he's finally looking healthy. We're finally seeing kind of what the Vikings saw in him when they decided to sign him to that, you know, 3-year, $15 million contract. You know, I think we're finally starting to see a little bit of that, and we're seeing him healthy from that surgery. So I think that's just important, because with Dalvin Cook being gone for the season, you know, I know, Jerick McKinnon's the most talented running back in the team now with Dalvin Cook gone, but Latavius Murray's has to play a big role in this offense if they were going to go, you know, deep in the playoffs. You're going to need him. So for him to be able to, you know, look healthy and be a little bit more explosive than he was, you know, early in the season, you know, from that surgery and all that, that's important going forward. So.
Yeah, go ahead, Prince. I was gonna have a follow up point on Latavius Murray, but you can go ahead.
Yeah, just it's quick. What do you guys think a credit to? Because you mentioned Anthony Barr, I've tried to like really study him and see what's really been different. Really, the only thing that I can kind of come to is they're treating him as a stand up defensive end, essentially. You know that he made his. He made his way as far as when he was back in UCLA. So really bringing him closer to the line of scrimmage and being more of a defensive end than that, you know, do-it-all linebacker and whatnot. But I'm curious of what you guys think. You can obviously answer this, Jason, after your rebuttal to that. But what has made him kind of return back to the Anthony Barr that we know versus whatever happened to him last year?
I mean, I think some of it's play calling, and that I think that I think that your observation is right. And it's something that I am interested in going and looking back at maybe when we have that extended time between the Thanksgiving game and the next game to see if they are being a bit more aggressive with the usage of Barr this year, because Mike Zimmer admitted last season that I think it was actually after Detroit burnt us. I want to say with Theo Riddick, like hitting us with a draw play when he fired off a blitz, that he became a bit more gun shy with really firing off some of those double A gap looks and sending Barr in as recklessly, I guess, as we'll say, we've seen him go in this year. And so I think that's really the big thing that I've noticed anyway, just kind of watching, not charting or really going and digging really deep to it. It just seems that Anthony Barr is best moving forward. He's best when he's in attack mode. And it seems anyway that the coaching staff did a great job of self-scouting and has just put him back in more positions where he gets to kind of read it, react it, and just go versus playing that kind of more passive, falling back and trying to read things in zone and things like that. Just seems that he's, he's being put in better positions to really do what he does best, which is kind of see it and then just attack it. And man, the way he's hitting things now, when he attacks it, it looks like he's really trying to do damage. So for me, from my observation, that's the big thing, but that's something that I definitely am interested in kind of digging into to see if the numbers bear out with what my eyes think they're telling me based on how he's been playing so far this season. How about you, Miles?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think it's coaching. And I think Anthony Barr's finally, he looks healthy. He looks, I know what we saw, you know, from Anthony Barr's first couple of seasons, he's flying around because he's healthy. He's, you know, wasn't really worrying about injuries and wasn't really playing through a lot. And I think that's what we're seeing right now too, which last season it looked like, you know, he didn't look healthy. But at the same time, I think like what you said, Jason, is the coaching staff's kind of finally understanding and realizing what Anthony Barr's strengths and weaknesses are. And I think the way they're finally starting to treat him is kind of different than what this overall like defensive scheme is. Instead of pigeonholing him into being strictly a 4-3 outside line, strong side linebacker, they're allowing him to be more of that like hybrid 3-4 outside linebacker and sub packages and, you know, on passing downs and stuff like that. So they're allowing him to kind of use that and use his ability in that to make more plays. And I think it's creative schemes from guys like, you know, George Edwards and Mike Zimmer to kind of do that with a guy like Anthony Barr, because they understand how special he is as a player. So I think that's kind of the biggest observation I've seen, is allowing him to go after the quarterback instead of forcing him and pigeonholing him into, going against running backs and slot receivers and tight ends, letting him go get the quarterback, letting him be a stand-up
outside linebacker and rushing the passer. I think that's just really important for, and a lot of growth in guys like, you know, Mike Zimmer kind of realizing that and understanding that what they have in a guy like Anthony Barr.
And in terms of the Rams, because on paper anyway, and I'm not going to lie, I watched maybe one game of the Rams, and like Jared mentioned on the last pod, like I didn't come away as impressed with them as maybe their record or their stats said that I should be, just based on what I saw. Jared Goff still looked at times to get skittish when, you know, things got in his face. It looked like a lot of, we'll say it's good coaching, but it's also, I mean, a bit gimmicky in terms of some of the things they were doing, you know, in the passing game. So I guess, you know, we'll go with a rapid fire on this one. Do you guys really see this as a statement win that kind of defines what the rest of the Vikings season is going to be like? Or do you see the Rams as maybe a team that was beating up on some lesser competition? So, Miles, I'll go with you first. Statement win or something else?
I definitely think it's got to be a combination of both. Because there was a lot of stuff I did think. I thought Jared Goff did do well. I thought he faced pressure really well early in the game, at least. But overall, I thought it was a good statement win, because that is a good, that's a really good roster with a really good coaching staff.
Okay, and Saxy Prince, what are your thoughts, man?
I'm kind of torn on this one, just because I did think that the Vikings were going to lose this, so I guess I would say it's a statement game. I think that after seeing it was really clear to me when I watched Goff operate, you know, live. You know, I just saw how much he was just continuing to change things at the lines, and it really just felt like, you know, he, I guess, was told to do that. So maybe, you know, McVay was like holding his hand, like, if you see this, change it to this. If you see this, change it to that. So maybe they are somewhat of pretenders as far as maybe not being quite what they're at. But I guess I have to give credit to the Vikings. Like, this was clearly a statement win, and, you know, they won by, you know, three plus scores. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move this thing along, because we get a chance for revenge, you know, coming up this week. So, you know, we were playing, you know, the Lions, and this is a game that I really, 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 really want the Vikings to go out and really make a statement in part because background, born in Canada, grew up in Ottawa for a little bit before moving down to Atlanta. And when we were kids, you had two choices. You had the Lions game or the Bills game. Those were the only broadcasts that you had a choice of. And so many of my coworkers are Lions fans and Bills fans, and one of them will not stop talking smack. He's a Lions fan, and I can't say anything because they keep beating us. Even though we're the better team, I felt like we were the better team when we played them earlier this year. I felt like we should have beat them when we played them both times last year. So this is a game that I really want. Like, I really want not just a win. I want a decisive win. I want us to go in there and really embarrass these fools on national television on Thanksgiving while everyone is out with their family. And so, you know, I'm going to kick it to you, Miles, first. As you're looking at this matchup, and it's one that I think most Vikings fans feel like we would have won the last time. I mean, it took a bunch of turnovers, us playing, you know, our backup who was still kind of getting his feet wet in the role, and our all-world running back going down for them to eke out a one-score victory. As we go for this rematch, but now that we're, you know, on their field, what are your thoughts about this game? What are your feelings about this matchup? And what are the keys to the Vikings pulling out this big win that I so desperately need so that I can go back into work and talk the appropriate amounts of smack to the people that I work with?
Yeah, I think this is a way different team than it was, you know, during that the first game they played against Detroit. Obviously, you could tell kind of the team as a whole, especially the offense, kind of deflated after Dalvin Cook went down. I think different this time around, just for the fact that you finally established Case as your starting quarterback, at least, you know, right now. You've established the way you want to run the ball with Latavius and Jet, which you didn't have against Detroit when, you know, after he went down. And then your receivers right now, like, you have a healthy Diggs, you have a healthy Adam Thielen. How is Detroit going to stop that? And at the same time, on defense, the guys that you really are only worried about are, you know, Golden Tate, and then just not allowing guys like Matt Stafford to get out of the pocket. If you can kind of combat those type of things, and I'm not saying other guys can't beat you, but those are like the main guys you really worry about, because I don't think we'll see Amir Abdullah, you know, have the 90 yards rushing this time around that we had the first time we played him. So, yeah, I think this should be a statement, like you said, Jason, one of those statement wins, one of those. This team is not better than us. The last few times they've beaten us has been a fluke. We're finally a way better team than we've been in the last, you know, year, I should say. And then, you know, making sure that we're taking care of business on third down, getting the defense up the field, and then having long, sustained drives, kind of like what we had against the Rams. Because I do think the Rams overall have a better roster than this Detroit team. The only difference is, like, a guy like Matt Stafford has a lot more experience playing against us in our defense, and then, you know, playing in the league in general. So that's the biggest difference, I think, between the two. But overall, I think the Rams were a better run team and had a better defense with better weapons on offense, overall weapons on offense, I should say, because of, like, guys like Todd Gurley, and we're able to combat that. So if we can get to Matt Stafford early and often, we got to make sure we put him down all the time, because he's one of those quarterbacks, and that team loves to come back from behind. So got to make sure we don't give those opportunities.
And Saxy Prince, what are the keys in your mind to a dominating performance from the Minnesota Vikings on the road Thanksgiving Day? What is it that you think we need to see in order for us to go out there and take care of things, handle our business, and play like the team that we all believe, and really that most of the analytics say? So when you look at, you know, DVOA or, you know, Pro Football Focus, ELO, all of these different types of systems, they all say we're a better team and have been saying we are a better team. What is it that we actually need to go and do this week to handle our business and come out with this big victory?
You're likely going to have to play the last Vikings quarterback to beat the Lions to really just dominate this game. In all seriousness,
I feel like I should just mute his microphone for the rest of the show, Miles. I mean, I feel like that's what really should.
In all seriousness, everyone really says that about me, so it wouldn't be really any different. Even when I'm playing saxophone. Anyways, the Vikings are clearly the better team on both sides of the ball. I think this defense should be able to suffocate Matthew Stafford. The only thing that really worries me about the Lions is I feel like they do sometimes underperform with the amount of weapons they have. They do have Theo Riddick. They have Amir Abdullah. They have Marvin Jones. They have Golden Tate. Sorry, it just escaped my mind. But I do think Matt Stafford has enough weapons to make this game relatively competitive. But I just don't think that's going to be the case. I think Matt Stafford's going to get rattled. I would look for this to be a game that Linval Joseph really eats alive that interior. This might be a game that Everson Griffin doesn't really get home as much, just because I think Taylor Decker is a better left tackle than I think Greg Robson was the last time he
It was definitely quote unquote lazy Greg Robinson that he faced the last time.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, so I think this defense will have more of its way this time around. And then the Lions do have some playmakers on the defense. I really like Darius Slay. But I just think that with the combination of Diggs and Thielen and Keenum able to find these guys, I just think it's just going to be a long day for that secondary to have to deal with both. You know, I think the best that the Lions can hope to have is to, you know, relatively slow down our passing game and, you know, have a guy like Latavius Murray or Jerick McKinnon try to beat them. I think that's probably the best chance that they have to win this game. After reading Luke's article, you know, I think he just did a really good job breaking down that, you know, Latavius Murray he's been kind of AP-ish in the way that, you know, he kind of famine feast before he really hits off some of those bigger runs. So Lions should kind of focus on taking away Diggs and Thielen like really any team, but really, you know, I guess put more emphasis on, like, if you're going to beat us, try to be as Latarius or Jarek.
Yeah, but I'm definitely with you on that. I think that the matchup really for us to exploit in this one is a linebacking core. I think that we can, I mean, as we've seen, especially since Lodinato went out, I mean, some of it's on the linebackers, I'm sure, but I think some of it's probably just that you know, the D-line isn't able to keep them clean anymore. I saw someone tweet today that, I mean, they're down to three, I think, healthy defensive tackles or something like that, and they were going to have to promote someone from the practice squad ahead of the game. So, I mean, that should be an area of the field that we're able to exploit with Jarek and with Latavius. And I also think that Jarek in the passing game is a plus matchup for us. So Darius Slay is good. Quandre Diggs is playing well. So, I mean, those will be matchups that will likely be a bit tougher for us in the passing game if we're trying to target the wide receivers. But I think Kyle Rudolph should be able to find space to operate in the middle of the field against their linebackers, so long as he stays away from Quinn. And I think that Jerick McKinnon should be able to find some space and be able to do some things if we're able to get him kind of matched up one-on-one with their linebackers as well. So those are the things that I'm really hoping to see. The last couple of weeks we've been calling for a Latavius Murray heavy game plan with Washington to exploit their lack of depth down the middle. The Rams and Aaron Donald and him getting upfield and us kind of running Latavius back, cutting back on using his aggressiveness against him. This is a week that I'm really hoping that we see a lot of Jarek McKinnon. I want to see him out on the edge, and I want to see a lot of screens and things like that to really exploit where I think Detroit is the weakest. But most of all, I really just want to see us, put it on them. I want to see the defense maybe actually run some, get some picks, score some points. All those things would be nice. But, we really just got to get this win because I really don't want to go to work and deal with these folks if we come out of this thing with an L. So, with that said, we've been on here for a little while now. So, Saxy Prince, what is your bold prediction? What is your score prediction?
Mostly because I want to see this happen and I need it to happen. I am going to predict Vikings win. I think it'll be I'm a little bit more confident in this game than I was in the Rams game. So I'm going to say, as far as score prediction, I'll say 27-21 Vikings, not 27-11 Vikings. And I will say, I will. I already have that as far as Marcus Sherrills. I will say.
Come on, man.
I know.
I mean, we let Miles use Treadwell for like 8 weeks in a row.
I will say Latavius Murray and Jarek McKinnon combined for 200 yards rushing.
How many touchdowns?
Between the two of them, just one.
Oh, okay. All right. Miles Gorham.
Yeah.
Bold prediction, score prediction. What you got for me?
Bold prediction. I'm going to say, I think we sack Matt Stafford at least five times. And ooh, bold. I think.
Is that bold? I feel like, didn't we almost get him like 10 times like last year or something?
That was last year. What did that do this year?
What else you got for? It's bold. Go bold. Like we're just gonna get five. We can knock them out the game.
No, okay. I don't want to predict knocking a player out of the game.
I mean, give me something else. Give me something bold, Mas.
Five sacks is quite a bit.
can we get some INTs?
Miles said five sacks. Jason's like, nah.
I need some. Fine. These five sacks, what's your score prediction?
With the five sacks, I think the score prediction is 27-17 because I think they score a late touchdown because that's just what they do.
Okay.
But to add to my bold prediction, to make you feel better.
Thank you.
I'm going to say Stephon Diggs has at least 8 catches for 140 yards and 2 touchdowns.
I need it. Okay. Let me see. Bold prediction. I mean, I'm going back to the well because I need this to happen, and I feel like the team needs this to happen at some point. I need a couple of defensive touchdowns because we need to score some points with this defense. I'm going to I'm sticking with Danielle Hunter. Scoop and score this week, though. Scoop and score for Danielle Hunter. And we're going with Mackenzie Alexander running one all the way back. And then in terms of my score prediction, again, because I need this to happen, I'm going 31-10. A good old-fashioned butt weapon on Thanksgiving. But Miles, since you brought it up, you know, I normally don't do this. It's probably poor form, but, you know, I produce a show. So, you know, if it gets too long, I can cut this out. But I need y'all's help. And I need y'all's help here. I got some decisions to make. They're tough decisions. Okay, so do I stick with Case Keenum on Thursday as my QB2?
In a super flex?
In a super flex. Or do I roll the dice? Like, have they announced who's starting in Buffalo yet?
They have not.
Or do I roll the dice on Tyrod versus Casey that's given up all the points?
I'd go Case because you know exactly what you know he's starting. So, like, okay. You don't want to risk Tyrod. No, he might still play. Risk that. I'd go Case.
Okay, and so follow up then. Because right now I have Stephon Diggs in the lineup. So if Case, Stephon, sure. But I was also considering, I got Jerick McKinnon for my RB2. I'm considering Jerick McKinnon, DeMarco Murray, and Tevin Coleman. Which way are you going?
Can you give me the matchups real quick just because I don't have them in front of me? And obviously, I know who the
Tevin Coleman. Play. Yeah, Tevin Coleman is going against Tampa Bay. Jerick McKinnon's got, obviously, Detroit. DeMarco's got Indianapolis.
That's hard not to go DeMarco there, but at the same time,
and we can't listen to Yinka because, you know, Yinka gave me all the wrong advice last week.
Technically, it was the right advice because you would have went Jerick McKinnon and DeMarco had outscored any of the guys that you suggested. So you're welcome.
This is a tough one just because if Devontae Freeman does come back, that obviously can eat into what Tevin Coleman does, even though he can still do some damage in the pass game.
I need Freeman to come back.
Oh, man. This is a tough one.
And Jerick definitely outscored Latavius Murray last week, Prince. So not sure what you're going with on that one. So what was your take there, Miles? Who are you going with?
I think you should go with DeMarco, but I'm having a tough time with it because these are – just because I don't think Indianapolis is any good. And I think a bit early, and then they're just going to need to run the clock.
Okay, and then final question. Larry Fitzgerald versus Jacksonville or T.Y. Hilton versus Tennessee?
T.Y. Hilton. Okay.
All right. Yeah, go ahead, Prince.
These guys can't even dog me right now because if we go to our fantasy dynasty league right now, I'm in second place.
We're still doing that?
8-3 record.
Definitely being edited.
With an 8-3 record, y'all.
Definitely being edited out of this episode. So,
for our listeners, if y'all need fantasy advice, you can come, Saxon Chris. The DMs are open all day, every day. I'll give you the advice. So,
Saxon Prince stayed telling folks he stayed telling everyone his DMs are open.
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. Whenever I can just slide that in.
It's every day. DMs
are open. Someone is listening to me right now. So.
Hey, man. You saw that Washington Post story. Them folks found love on a podcast. It can happen.
I know, right? And we have put out the bat beacon for someone to take the call. But, you know, it'll happen someday.
All right. Well, I'm gonna go ahead. I'm gonna go ahead and just wrap this thing up. Prince, you got anything upcoming? Any articles? Anything we should be on the lookout for?
No, it'll probably be something spontaneous this week. I don't know, whatever kind of comes to my mind or whatever.
The man got a computer now. And Miles, what's going on over there?
It's nice.
How's Teddy doing?
Hello. Teddy's trying. He's doing good. He's getting big, really big. But he's chewing on our coffee table, so that's not good.
Yeah, that is not good. So, you got anything on deck for us, man?
I'm working on some college stuff right now. It's in the works, and I've started it. I just need to finish it.
Okay. Hey.
Nope.
Why you gotta do the man like that?
Thank you, Yanka. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Why you gotta do the man?
Hey, like y'all that? Give me the entire pod, so I gotta, you know, just like Addy Ninja, right? Just sneak in, get out, and whatnot.
All right. Well,
a single guy.
Well, I'm going to just wrap. We've gone completely off the rails. We've gone off the rails. I'm gonna thank y'all if you're still listening. Good for you, because you know, bless, I don't even heart. Think our parents aren't even still listening at this point. So, thank you for listening to another episode of the Climb in the Pocket podcast. This will be the only episode for this week. It's Thanksgiving. Have fun with your families, and we will be back with y'all early next week. Have a good one.